Hello there. Back in early 2009, when I was based in Central Florida, I did a show on social media, then called Social Networking, with two younger people who were deep into it. Since Twitter was brand new back then, I called the show You're All a Twitter. I thought it would be interesting to rerun that show and see what's changed in the past 12 years. So here we go. Welcome to American Variety Radio. I'm your host, Court Lewis. You know, probably everybody has heard of MySpace and maybe even has a MySpace account or, you know, kind of its competitor, Facebook, which is, I guess, kind of like the Avis to the Hertz, you know, sort of the We Try Harder number two. And those are social networking sites. That's the sort of generic term that describes them all. And we're going to have a show today about social networking because there's a whole slew of these sites out there that most people aren't familiar with beyond those two big ones that I just mentioned. Kind of the one you've been hearing about lately maybe is Twitter. And so that's an interesting cutesy name, but most people, I would guess, over 45 really have no idea what Twitter is or what Twittering is all about. So I've got a couple people with me today as guests. Peter Hughes is joining us by phone from San Antonio. He's a website developer for a company called Click to Try. But he's also, more pertinent to our show here today, is the host of a radio show called Technology Bites, which is on some NPR affiliate stations in Texas. Welcome, Peter.
Hello.
So Peter is on geekradio.com and, as I say, the host of a show called Technology Bites. And he's, I would call, an expert and prolific user of social networking sites and somebody who thinks about it and can talk about it with us and have an interesting discussion about social networking. My other guest is here in the studio with me. Her name is Suzanne Clements. She's a painter and a professional photographer and a graphic artist and designer who lives here and based in the Melbourne area, and also an author of a book on the marketing of art. So she's somebody who is not as heavily involved in social networking sites, but does belong to a number of them and uses them for different purposes. And so that's part of what we're going to talk about here today, is kind of what the landscape of these social networking sites is today, and how they've evolved into what they are and what people use them for. And there's a wide range of purposes for them. So welcome, Suzanne.
Hello, thank you.
So I gather, just taking a quick look at Wikipedia, which is, you know, the great way to be an instant expert on anything nowadays in about 2 minutes or less, that there are currently 137 major active social networking sites listed on Wikipedia. And I suppose that's a number that varies daily, if not hourly. And there are a lot more that are not major and that are not active, but that's, anyway, the ballpark number. And when you look at the list, it's phenomenal how wide a range of topics they cover. So, you know, as I said, MySpace is the biggest. It seems to have about 2/3 of all the social networking market in the U.S. as of late last fall. Facebook is the number two, which has over 20% of the market and is growing. And all the others are smaller, and they're very specialized. It's kind of like cable TV. You know, they get down to the nth little niche of people who are interested in a certain topic and have a social networking site devoted to that. So, Peter, I'm going to ask you, if you don't mind, to start off just kind of giving us an overview of the evolution of social networking. Where did it start and when, and how did it grow in what steps to where it is today?
Well, in a lot of senses, the social networking has been around, you know, forever, as long as there have been people. If you think about it, if you've ever traveled in the Midwest, there are places where there's the, like, council tree, which would be this gigantic tree by itself, and people would post notes on it.
Okay, yeah, that's right.
Including the Native Americans. And so it was, you know, I'm heading out to the mountains or I'm going off to somewhere. They would leave that there, and there was a central place where people could go to find out information about that person.
The early original primitive bulletin board, I guess, huh?
Yeah. So flash forward, and you know, that's bulletin boards. That's why they're called bulletin boards, is because they act like the one with thumbtacks.
Okay.
You know, flash forward to, you know, to when you had to dial up bulletin boards, mm-hmm. and people could call up and post their message, and usually that was tied around an interest. They're posting their, you know, their particular interest that was tied to that board, but gets to where people talk about themselves.
Well, hang on just a second. So for those who are either too young or who are too new to computers to remember the original bulletin boards, and I do, and I guess Suzanne does,
yep.
What time frame was that?
That would have been, that was way back in the 80s,
yeah.
And particularly late 80s, mm-hmm. when you dialed up with a modem on a phone line, and usually a lot of bulletin boards only one person could be on the bulletin board at a time, the one who had called in. It was like you called the computer and typed in your things to it. You called the bulletin board computer and typed your things into it, and then you disconnected, and then the next person could see what you left.
Okay, so it was, in a sense, like the council tree, and that you'd leave a note, and then somebody else would tack a note below or on top of your note, like that.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then the next step was when they started hooking computers together, you know, with the internet is what everybody kind of knows now. But when these bulletin boards, sometimes the bulletin boards actually would call each other and pass on messages, which evolved into both bulletin boards that were dispersed over wider areas and also email, essentially messaging across. And then when they got onto networks that were more full-time, like the internet, then you got into something called Usenet, which was a particular structure. It's evolved into Google Groups and Yahoo Groups now, but essentially it was bulletin boards on particular subjects, and at its peak there were thousands and thousands of these interest groups that people would post to. And then, you know, alongside, you notice I mentioned that the bulletin boards also kind of had that email communication component. Well, then you also got into the chat, the Internet Relay Chat, where it's real-time chat, or AOL Instant Messenger.
And so in those, a lot of people can be on at the same time. They can't necessarily all communicate momentarily at the same time, but they're all on watching in real time as the thing is typed out, and they can immediately type in their response and that kind of thing, right?
Right. And then later on, these things all kind of swirl together, and you get a combination where it's got your discussion, it's got your personal things about you, it's also got a real-time component where you can communicate in real time if you're both there at the same time, but it's also got, you know, that kind of message, that the message board piece still kind of stays in there. If you go to Facebook or MySpace, every one of them has, you know, the wall or the place where people come and leave their messages for you, or you leave messages for them.
And so in that iteration you're talking about there, I think you said it's information about you. And so I think you're talking there about something, because that was the advent of the web and people could put up their own websites. That was where an individual could then set up their own bulletin board oriented around themselves maybe, or their own interests, right? Rather than an organization doing it in a neutral way.
Right. And plus the, like the council tree, then people know, you know, the most popular ones, the reason I think some of these rise to be the big number one is that it's the central place. People know to go there to look for information about other people.
Or a particular topic, maybe, or?
I guess MySpace also, in particular, MySpace has, you know, where it's by interests, you know, where it's not just people, it's bands or organizations and that. But the main social part, it seems to tie, a lot of it is tying the people together. They may share a common interest, but they also have an interest in each other. There's that social piece about knowing what that other person is doing and what their interests are, even beyond the shared one.
So is the thing you just described what we would call a blog, or is that a different animal?
A blog is more of an online journal. There's the thing that's funny, and that's where defining social media in general gets really hazy really quick. It turns into sort of anything you do on the internet to communicate with somebody else really fits under social media if you look. But the blogging piece is a more one way, where you kind of just have a journal where you talk about yourself or your interest, and people can come by and consume it, but it doesn't have as much of that back and forth conversation.
Oh, I see. Okay. Okay, so that's like, and that word evolved or derived from originally from weblog. So it was a log on the web, and it really is like a diary or a journal. So I guess that would make sense that it's more a one-way self-expression medium, right? So that's different then.
Yes, and the funny thing is how all these things keep popping up in different forms to do different things, and they keep, you know, the bulletin board that comes from, you know, the cork thing with the frame on it and thumbtacks evolves into a digital online thing.
Yeah.
You know, the web log morphs into, you know, it basically became part of the MySpace thing. I mean, there is that piece where you talk about yourself. It's just not as much of a journaling experience on, like, MySpace and Facebook. Then you get things like Twitter and some of those where you're messaging again, but you're sort of, they're called microblogging, which is where you're messaging little short journal posts about yourself.
Okay, so that's the next iteration beyond beyond the MySpace type of social media, as you say. Is that a direct lineage then between those, between MySpace and Facebook, and microblogs, or is it more microblogs came out of blogs, I guess?
Microblogs came, I think, more out of blogs, and were sort of in parallel with the MySpace and Facebook kind of thing. But the glory of the Internet is, of course, all these things interconnect. And so you can tie your Twitter feed, you mentioned Twitter in the lead-in,
yeah.
You can tie your Twitter feed into your MySpace page, and it'll show what you're Twittering to the people who come to you through MySpace.
So what does Twitter do? And if that's a microblog, you know, so you said it's like a blog that has only short little brief sentence things rather than a long page or whatever about how I spent my summer. What does a microblog do?
A microblog basically allows you to put out short 144-character messages to the world. You announce it out, so it's got that blog kind of journal approach. And then people who have chosen to follow you and receive those messages when you send them get them either through a web page or a special client. It's kind of, it's almost like chat, like messaging, instant messaging, except it goes out to any person who chooses to subscribe and follow and get those from you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. As opposed to you saying, I'm going to send it to Joe's phone, to one message to Joe. You put it out there to the world, and everybody who chooses, you know, on a very simple basis, everybody who chooses to consume that message or get those messages can.
All right, so is something like Twitter more connected than something like MySpace, or is it just the same kind of thing, only it's short messages rather than long? And I mean, is there a fundamental difference in Twitter in the way it operates and what it does?
Yeah, Twitter is a more mobile thing. It works a lot better with phones and with sort of real time, because the person sends the message and you get it right then. Where something like MySpace, the thing is, you can have more information. You can have a photo gallery or a video gallery about yourself or about your interests, and those messages. There's more things in one place, but of course that's not as good in the mobile space.
Mm-hmm. So, Suzanne, what ones are you on? What social networking sites do you swim around in?
Way too many.
Oh, yeah? Well, I know you're a very busy person, so you can't spend too much time playing.
And when I'm really busy, I drop off the face of the earth. Nobody knows where I've been for, you know, weeks. But I started off back in the day on like classmates.com and Friendster, and then MySpace, and Facebook is most recent because I finally gave in to everybody inviting me to join.
Yeah.
So I was like, all right, fine, I'll join. But I'm also on LiveJournal, I'm on Blogger, I'm on LinkedIn, I'm on Flickr. I don't Twitter, but I do like the proprietary version of Twitter within Facebook every now and then. And like an example of a message that someone might send out would be like, you know, Suzanne is very busy today and can't talk to anybody. And it just goes out or whatever.
Okay. <You know? laughs> It's a social non-networking site in that case. We're listening to American Variety Radio, and I'm your host, Court Lewis. We're talking with Peter Hughes, who's the host of a radio show called Technology Bites, and with Suzanne Clements, who's an artist who is an avid user of social networking sites, about that topic. We're talking about social networking. So we've just gone through the, quote, academic part of it, where we've described what, in general, what the lay of the land is for these things and how they evolved from bulletin boards back in the mid-80s or so. And now let's just, like, spend the last half of the show really talking about the different kinds of sites and what they're used for and, you know, what their purposes are. And in a way, we're going to talk also about the good and bad aspects of them, because like anything on the Internet, there's a lot of very good things and a lot of very bad things that come from the availability of these sites online. Suzanne, you mentioned you just listed all of the ones that you were involved in. Why don't you just give us like the bumper sticker version of what of what they are? I mean, other than the ones we've already described to some extent.
Flickr is probably one of my favorite ones for like a really quick peek if I'm taking a break from work. It's just where people can upload their photos or their illustrations or anything that they can upload on an image format. So if you're a graphic designer, you can also upload your designs. And it's more open unless you choose to make your account private, and you can join communities and whatnot. So if you're a photographer and you know other photographers who are experimenting in a new method, you can go in there and peek and see what other people have been doing either with their cameras or that technique. And it gives you kind of a quick burst of inspiration and ideas. And then you can give them feedback, like, oh, this is the most amazing picture I've seen. And you can even highlight certain areas on the picture and leave notes just specific to that part of the image as well.
Okay, so that's one that's useful primarily for professional purposes, or at least for people who are serious hobbyists.
Or families, too, because they can share their family pictures among each other as well.
So. But it's not what I think of as purely social and chattery like MySpace, which is not purely that, but it tends to be more just, you know, here's who I am and here's all my friends, and, you know, just kind of a way to talk and communicate. That has a functional utilitarian purpose to it, it sounds
like. It does,
like.
But it still has communities with the bulletin board system built into it where you can post messages like, hey, I just bought this camera, where can I get lenses for it, or what lenses would work with it, and people can post back, and that's more of like a long-term conversation that would go on. Plus, you still have your friends or contacts, and you can organize your friends, and you can make friends and get rid of friends, just like you can on a lot of the sites.
Okay, so that one is Flickr, which is F-L-I-C-K-R, right?
Yes.
And I guess you just put in Flickr, .com, I suppose, and go there, and you join it like you would MySpace, and you can set up your own area, I assume. It's not just post things like YouTube, where you just post a particular thing, and it tells who you are, but you have your own area in that?
Yeah, you have your own page, and then you can have a basic free account, or you can upgrade, and then you can organize your images into different sets. And
okay. So you mentioned LinkedIn.
Mm-hmm.
That's LinkedIn, one word?
Yeah.
Or is it no E in the middle? Anyway, LinkedIn, you'll find it.
Google it.
That's up to you people. You got to do some work out there. So what does LinkedIn do for you?
LinkedIn is more of a professional sort of connection. Like, I've got my resume out there, and then former coworkers can also post how well you worked with them on a job, or give a critique of your professional performance.
Wow.
So it's sort of more like a big advertisement for what a great employee you could
be. A bunch of references, so you get all your buddies together to give you great references, or you get the people who didn't like you in your last job who torpedo you mercilessly.
I believe you can edit, like, you can remove comments.
Kind of like jury selection, you can eliminate three.
But yeah, no, and that's a great site. The company I used to work for up in Michigan, before it started to really circle the drain seriously, we all got on there so that, you know, when the boxes and the red pink slips came out, we still could keep in touch and still work with each other down the road too.
But it is, you know, it's a professional networking tool.
Yes.
And so you can be linked to many other people who themselves maybe are linked to you, and so there's this giant, you know, network, and that's why it's a business network rather than a social network as such. But
right, and you can send out messages like, I am looking for someone with these skills, and it can go out to your contact group, and if they know of somebody, you know, they can help you find an employee or an employer.
Well, I think most people know what classmates.com is, because if you use the web at all, you've seen, you know, now you're on your 6,000th ad for classmates.com. And so that, you know, that's a particular kind of networking site that's narrow cast in the sense that your group is those you graduated from high school with in a given year, I suppose, or any years you want to establish. Or
this one I joined many years ago. I think it was back in 1998 or 99. And I lost interest because it was just so limited back then.
Yeah. And I think it's an old tech kind of thing anyway, as far as these social networking sites.
Yeah, I haven't been back
limited.
There in a while. I don't know, you know, if maybe, you know, Peter's used it, but I don't have a lot of experience with that one.
Well, I'm going to read, you know, before we go back to Peter and maybe just talking generally, I'm going to read from the Wikipedia list. As I said, there's 137 listed a couple days ago of social networking websites. DeviantArt. Have you ever looked at that one?
Yeah, I have a membership there.
All right. So does that imply you're a deviant, or is it just sort of that's a cute name for it?
I think it's a lot like Flickr, except it's more specifically for artists who are trying to market themselves. I haven't been there in a while, but it seems to be like a lot of artists will use that as their portfolio site too.
But then, you know, as I said earlier, it's kind of like cable TV. You know, there's a channel for everybody. There's Horseland, which is devoted obviously to people who are big into horses, you know, equestrians and so on, and people who own and love horses. There's My Church for Christian churches. You know, there's Out Everywhere for the gay, LGBTQ, I guess that's lesbian, gay, bi, transvestite, and
transgender.
I don't know what the Q would be. I'm not going to guess, but anyway, but that's Out Everywhere, so that's for the people in that community. Plurk is a microblogging site that I think, Peter, is this correct, that Plurk is a junior competitor of Twitter now?
Yes.
So it's the same kind of thing?
Yeah, it There's been a lot of kind of back and forth between people. They're very comparable between each other, and I believe Twitter is kind of has started to dominate at
yeah.
this point.
Yep, Twitter is the bigger one. Plurk, that's why we haven't heard of it. It's just lurking in the background there, but it's P-L-U-R-K.
A lot of these are essentially sort of social bookmarking sites, which is where, you know, DeviantArt or Flickr, there's a place where you go if you already know there's photos there and you're going to go there. But then you can get into these sites that mark a place or that are a central place that has where if you've got an interest, like the horse fanciers,
yeah.
You can go there and you'll find all the bookmarks, all the sites that other people found mm-hmm. that they were interested in on that subject.
So that'd be like Dig and Delicious and StumbleUpon?
StumbleUpon. Yeah, I was going to ask about that.
Yeah, StumbleUpon. Dig is more of a, it's sort of a hybrid on that because it's more like news stories. So it's what's the most interesting story to the majority of people who are rating things on Dig. So it tends to be more newsy. It tends to be more current as to what's happening in out in the world or out on the internet.
Okay, so for those out there who are following this arcane discussion, this is D-I-G-G, is Dig. No, it is kind of cool when you get into all these things because, you know, like anything on the web, it just multiplies and metastasizes and grows so widely, you know, and there are all these things that even if you're really into it, you have trouble keeping up with it, I suppose. There's Mix, which is M-I-X-X, exclamation point even, and then Buzz. There seem to be a lot of double consonants at the end, Buzz, B-U-Z-Z. And then here's to pull one out of a hat. What's FARC, dare
FARC.
I ask, Peter? F-A-R-K.
FARC is if you have a community, it's kind of like Dig, where people are submitting stories and they kind of vote them up or down as far as what shows up on the front page.
Right.
That's always, of course, the top 10 kind of thing. But FARC has a very particular community. They're very sarcastic and they are there for the laughs. And
yep.
so
okay.
they if it's your thing, it can be very, very amusing. And if not, it is a very special interest. I guess I'll say that.
Okay. You know, so again, a lot of these things are special interest, and they lend themselves more and more to specialized groups of people, either in terms of interest or personality, you know, so you can get more and more subdivided down to people who have that interest and who also have this kind of attitude toward that interest or whatever, right? So,
yeah, it ends up the common interest is sort of being snarky about everything in the world.
Or farky, I guess, as the case may be.
Yeah, well, fark is a euphemism for something else, but I will leave it to the listenership to figure
All right.
that one out.
It's probably not suitable for general consumption on an NPR affiliate station.
or any station.
Okay, we'll take your word for it. You're listening to American Variety Radio. I'm your host, Court Lewis. We're talking with Suzanne Clements, a Melbourne-based artist who's a frequent and avid user of a variety of social and business networking sites, and Peter Hughes, who is the host of Technology Bites, originating out of San Antonio, Texas, on several NPR affiliate stations out that way. He's a website developer also. And so why don't we turn to, in our last, you know, 4 or 5 minutes here, to talk about the ways that these sites in general or this capability online has both good and bad aspects from a kind of individual and a social point of view, I suppose. So that sounds a little heavy, but I mean, you know, let me just start it off. Like, let's talk about the ways that they're good. And one obviously is that it gives people who would otherwise be isolated a feeling of being part of a group of people who have the same interests they do. So that's a good thing. It's kind of like, you know, being in a college classroom where you're all taking the same course and you all sort of are interested in that thing. So, but it's that on a worldwide basis, really, even though these things tend to be more clustered around a country or, you know, the U.S. or whatever, they're still worldwide by their nature, right? So that's maybe one good thing that we could agree on, that it gives people a way of being connected with people of similar interests. Even if it's not in body, it's still, you know, by email and online.
Absolutely.
What are some other good things about these sites in general?
Well, you can reconnect with old friends that you haven't talked to in a long time, people that you, you know, maybe since college have lost touch with because, at least for me back then, like email and all that just wasn't as commonly used. So now people are coming out of the woodwork that I haven't heard from probably in 10, 15 years, yeah. Which is good and bad because you don't always remember everybody who shows up at your Facebook page and is like, hey.
Oh, you again. Hey.
You seem to be friends with all my other friends. I guess I better friend this person.
Peter, what are some other good things about it?
Well, like LinkedIn, you know, the example, everybody's right. had the experience in the past of you work at different places and you move on to a new job, and as much as you would like to keep in touch with people, mm-hmm. acquaintances from your old workplace, you lose track.
Yep.
Where a place like LinkedIn, it's easier for them to find you and connect up because, you know, I had that experience. I worked at a Fortune 100 company and you know, moved on from there, as did the rest of the people in my group because we were all laid off. And yeah. And so once one of them connects up with another, then if anybody hits that chain, suddenly you have access again to all these people that you would have a difficult time tracking down by yourself, but they're all linked up together on this networking site, and you can get back in touch with them.
Absolutely.
You know, and in addition, as Suzanne was describing earlier with Flickr, it does give you access to stuff you need, you know, to resources that you can use mm-hmm. in your business and in your hobbies. Well, you know, gosh, we've got like a minute left, and I haven't left us enough time to talk about the ways that it's bad, and I think in many ways it's, we could spend more time talking about that, but just quickly, one is that, like, it's addictive. I mean, these things, people spend all night long and they spend time at work that they would otherwise should be and would be doing other more useful and productive things doing this, which in effect is like class, you know, passing notes in class, so to speak, on a very large scale. So would you both agree that the addictive aspect of it is, generally speaking, can be a problem socially?
That's big. And the other thing is nothing that's ever gone onto the internet truly disappears.
Yeah,
that's true. Yeah, there's a lot
that
of people out there.
Of you, mm-hmm. That picture of you in the embarrassing costume, or that little note you posted,
yeah.
That doesn't go away. That's there for your future boss to Google.
Yep. So now that you're applying to Harvard, there's a picture of you down on your knees at Panama City Beach, sucking out of a beer bong with your, you know, with your G-string thong bikini on or something, and it's not really conducive to getting where you want to go. 2 years later,
especially,
and nobody ever
guys.
Gets rid of it.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, right. Well, maybe. But so, you know, and I think along with giving people a way to get together, it also empowers people who are dangerous and who have kind of antisocial and deviant ideas. And instead of being isolated in their little, you know, cabin in Montana, instead they're all connected together and can kind of plot and think and whip each other up. And, you know, I think that's a bad thing overall, you know, so... you know, people's information can get out of control too. It's kind of like we were just saying, but on a bigger scale, stuff you put out there today.
Well, they can get your birth date.
Yeah.
You know, where you were born. They can get all sorts of information about you that they can then use to take your identity too. So you've got to be kind of careful what you allow to be public as well.
So this is obviously one of those topics that we could talk about for an hour, as I often have on American Variety in our skimpy little half hour, but we're going to have to leave it at that. And maybe we can come back again and kind of, you know, recap the first part and then spend more on the last part again sometime soon, if you're both willing.
Sure.
I appreciate you both being on with me on American Variety. Peter, thank you, and Suzanne.
You bet.
Thank you.
Thanks to you all for listening. I hope you'll tune in again next week, same time, same place, for more American Variety Radio.